Hello, Paul Barclay here. Welcome to Australia Talks on ABC Radio, National Radio Australia and online. Hope you've had a good start to the working week, haven't been suffering too much from Mondayitis. If your Sunday evening was anything like mine, you may have been visited by hordes of children knocking on your door asking for sweets. It was, you might know, Halloween yesterday, and above all else, it seems that this means consuming vast quantities of confectionery, which probably wouldn't be that big a deal if it was just a once-a-year treat, but it's not. As I'm sure you know, Australian children are putting on weight and eating poorly. In fact, a quarter of them are overweight or obese, and efforts to tackle the problem aren't working. Well, so says a new paper from the Productivity Commission anyway. Why aren't the health campaigns working, and how do you get children to eat less junk and do more exercise too? Well, that's what we're talking about today, and I'd love to hear your ideas. Call now on 1300 22 55 76, and you can, of course, post your views online on our comments page. Over 20 posts already on our comments page. Love to hear yours, though. Just search ABC Australia Talks, and it becomes apparent how easy it is to post your views. First up tonight, we've got Kate Carnell, Chief Executive Officer of the Australian Food and Grocery Council, and Rob Moody, the Chair of the National Preventative Health Task Force. Rob Moody, I'll come to you. First of all, welcome to Australia Talks.
Thank you, Paul.
Let me quote from this Productivity Commission paper. It says, "The available evidence suggests that many interventions to prevent childhood obesity have not been effective in preventing weight gain to any significant degree." That's a fairly grave concern, isn't it?
Well, can I just first of all come back to this report? I mean, this is a report not actually of the Productivity Commission. It's an extremely poorly constructed report, which misses so much of the available evidence. It particularly misses the available evidence around what community interventions have been actually evaluated and worked. It misses all the evidence on the effect of junk food advertising on what children eat, what they want to eat, and what their parents actually, what they pester their parents to buy. It misses the very good work done on cost effectiveness done by the ACE Obesity and ACE Prevention groups on how effective bans on junk food marketing to children would be, a 10% tax on junk food. So, I mean, in many ways, we've got a problem at the moment because we simply haven't intervened at scale with the things that we need to do. Simple education programs simply won't work. At the moment, obesity is fundamentally a commercial success in Australia. The size of the market around junk food, junk drinks, huge outweighs the size of the market of promotions for healthy food. Similarly, inactivity, I mean, if you talk about driving a car or inactive entertainment, being video or video games or TV, then that sort of market hugely outweighs the activity market. Until we start to balance that a bit, then it doesn't matter how good parents are at actually encouraging their kids to move, to eat well. The environment we have around them at the moment is, in a sense, making them grow. And until we change both the environment and, in a sense, parents have more chance to influence their children's activity and what they eat, we're in for a really tough time.
So the fact that there is still a quarter of children classified as overweight or obese, despite these dozens of campaigns, that isn't evidence.
We haven't had dozens of campaigns. That's the whole point, Paul. I mean, what we said in the Preventative Health Task Force, I mean, is that
in the appendix of the Productivity, in the appendix though of the Productivity Commission, they do list many, many so-called programs.
Small scale. I mean, we know from what works in the sort of public health world that you actually have to do comprehensive programs over time that take into account things like pricing, like promotions, like school-based programs, preschool programs, workplace programs. These things simply haven't been done at scale yet, Paul, that's the sort of situation where we are at the moment. Unless we do take these things to scale, and this is what we were pushing for on the Preventative Health Task Force, then, as I said before, the overwhelming drivers behind activity at the moment and the commercial pressures around what makes a profit means that ultimately we do more and more inactivity and we eat more and more junk food.
Yes. Kate Carnell, do you accept this finding from the Productivity Commission that there are many quite expensive programs aimed at childhood obesity that aren't in fact that effective?
Oh, I think that goes without saying. Those are what the facts say. I think it's a bit wrong to suggest we haven't had any major looks at what would happen, say, with a tax on processed foods versus fresh food. We've got the GST. The GST is a 10% tax on processed food and no tax on fresh food. And really, since the GST came in, we certainly haven't seen a reduction in levels of obesity. We've also got a number of states in the US that have a tax on soft drink. Mm. They don't have lower levels of obesity. We have a number of countries around the world that have banned high-fat, high-sugar, high-salt advertising.
We're going to come to the issue of taxation, junk food ads a little later, because it is something that's worth focusing in on detail. But just in terms of the programs themselves, the community-based programs, some school-based programs, you're agreeing, is what you're saying, with the Productivity Commission, that those programs have not really worked terribly effectively.
Look, they haven't worked terribly effectively. Some of them have got good outcomes in as much as the people, the children that are involved in them have ended up fitter, which is a very good thing. So there's been some health, some positive health outcomes. But in terms of actually addressing the obesity issue, or BMI, they really haven't shown great success. So I think this does come back to the fact this is a very complex problem. There's no silver bullet, that we do have to work as a whole community together to address this issue.
Yes, I think Rob Moody would agree with that. 1300 22 55 76 is the number. You can post your views on our webpage. Just search ABC Australia Talks. If you're quick, I can read some of your comments out tonight. Ben has already posted online. And he suggests the problem is that we've moved a long way away from a paleo diet based largely on animal protein and fat with limited carbohydrates. The modern Western diet, Ben says, advocated by health experts, is the opposite. Low protein and fat, but very high carbohydrate intake, mainly overly processed. And we often get this discussion, carbohydrates versus protein, when we have this discussion. Rob Moody, though, given how serious this problem is, we should obviously be taking here a measured, evidence-based approach, as this paper suggests. Would that involve weeding out maybe some of the programs that haven't been effective and focusing those resources on others or other efforts that do have a proven track record?
It's a very good point, Paul. And I think what you said then was actually evidence-based. And unfortunately, the report that we've actually been discussing is nowhere near what you could call evidence-based. I mean, if they forget the three most important recent interventions called Be Active Well in primary schools, Romp and Chomp in preschools, It's Your Move in secondary schools, all have been successful in reducing unhealthy weight gain in children in these settings. I mean, these are now ready to be translated to much larger scale. So we actually do know something about what works. But as I said before, if they're talking about junk food advertising, and they leave out the three leading international reviews of the evidence, then, you know, I think we do have to come back to the evidence. I mean, at the task force, and Kate was a part of the task force, we spent a year and a half putting together, in a sense, the best level of evidence on which we could then judge our interventions and what Australia should be doing as a nation. You're quite right, and Kate's quite right, it is complex. But we really do have to focus on the evidence. I think the evidence around, and we'll come back to it later on tax, you know, that's something at the task force we said, look, we really have to have a very good look at this and consider it, as you said, in the light of day.
What about the suggestion that education may be a better, more effective on cost basis approach to tackling childhood obesity? Is there enough well-targeted education?
I don't quite know how they made that judgment. I mean, these people have done this report, and I'm quite surprised they aren't actually here defending their report. And I wonder why they aren't.
But they were invited, actually.
I'm not surprised they actually haven't turned up. I mean, it is really an undergraduate performance. And you know, frankly, they've missed so much of the evidence that we've looked at and has since been developed since we wrote the Preventive Health Task Force. And Simon, coming back to things that do work, education on its own, we know from other areas, you know, education on its own simply does not work, particularly when our kids are receiving such saturation levels of promotion around junk food. Now, that's something that to balance that, you really do need incredibly effective social marketing. We're just starting to do that, I think, with the national program. That's got to sort of be at scale. It's got to be at scale for a number of years before it really kicks in and works. As I said, I've actually got a pretty bleak outlook in terms of how Australia can deal with this issue at the moment, unless we can come to grips with some of these issues around promotion, around pricing. I know Kate's leading some terrific work on reducing the level of sugar and fats and salts in food with the food industry. That's absolutely vital that that sort of thing happens.
I wonder, Kate, what you think about education and whether that is or should be a key focus, because personally, as someone who has children who from time to time, a little bit more than I would like, actually, do consume what I would consider poor foods, they know what they're eating isn't good for them. I don't know how you convince a 9-year-old, though, that a hamburger might lead 10, 20 years down the track to type 2 diabetes. Is education the problem?
Education, some of it, there's no doubt. It's true that we've probably got a generation of people who don't maybe cook as much as we used to, know as much about how to cook. And I have to say Master Chef and Junior Master Chef is making a big inroad into making people more interested in cooking at home. I think there's much better labelling of food these days. We've got those panels on the back of all food and also front of pack labelling, so people can see the amount of kilojoules and fat and sugar and salt in products. So I think education is definitely part of it. Cooking at home is definitely part of it. But we've also got a society where it's harder to exercise than it used to be. You know, it's a bit hard. I don't know. I used to drop my kids off at school because I was worried about them walking to school on their own. And I think lots of parents do that. Some parents aren't comfortable about the kids playing at the park. Mm. We do have a society that's just a little bit harder than it used to be, say, when I was a kid, where mum kicked us out and said, go and play on the road. And well, not quite, but yeah. Go and play with your mates down at the park. Harder to do that these days. So we've got to address that from a planning perspective and from a society perspective on how we make it easier to exercise.
The whole of government approach will also come to that. We're talking about childhood obesity on Australia Talks. What do you think? What can we do to trim down our overweight kids? Let's head to Denise in Brisbane. Hello, Denise.
Hi, how are you going?
I'm good, thanks.
I just wanted to say that it's a struggle for us. We have a child that is slightly obese, and we're very conscious about our own weight, and we only have really good food in the house. But no matter what we buy, we get pressure from our child to buy these little yogurts in tubes, and you know that it is this perception that it's good for them, but it's not. It's high in sugar. So I think what you were talking about earlier, that the types of foods that we buy, it's very complex, and for parents who are buying this, it's really difficult to understand whether it is really good for them or it's not.
The message gets mixed, doesn't it?
Like it does.
That's a good point. So people think yogurt, that's a healthy choice, in the same way that people might think cereals or muesli is a healthy choice. Then you get to a muesli bar on the shelf and people think, oh, it's not too bad. But, of course, that's got very high sugar content.
Absolutely, and the complex fats and that sort of stuff. Mm. And you might pick up a pack and it says it's 98% fat-free or cholesterol-free, but you've got to read the fine print, and sometimes it's so tiny you really can't read it.
Yeah, yep.
And 98%, and it could still have a very high content of fat.
It is
a battle.
It's a battle, and it's tough for parents, no doubt about it, Denise. Thanks for your call. Jerry has said this too in her post: if you don't want your children to eat junk food, do not have it in the house. And perhaps in response to Kate's comment, make your kids walk to school. Let's go to Irene in Hobart, who thinks there might be some answers over in Denmark. Hi, Irene.
Hi. I imagine in other countries, Scandinavian countries as well, but get ready for a shock when I tell you about this, because I got a shock. I couldn't believe it. I have a friend who now has grandchildren, and her daughter, in fact, lived with us for a little while here in Hobart. Now, her children were raised out of the supermarket, and they always had colds and goodness only knows what else wrong with them. Her grandchildren, her six grandchildren, are the healthiest children you ever saw in your life. And her daughter took me to the largest primary school in Copenhagen. I saw all these children. It was after school. She went to pick up her son. They're all skinny. They're all running around the playground like mad. I never saw one with a sniffly nose or anything like that. And then I got taken upstairs. She insisted on taking me up to where they're having their afternoon tea.
Mm.
And laid out on this table were rye beater biscuits, rye king, that sort of thing. Mm. Nothing on them at all. And pieces of melon, the most beautiful quality melon, and apple. That was afternoon tea.
Mm.
And then I got taken to the kindergarten to pick up her other son. And that was a very big kindergarten too. And the afternoon tea was laid out in the yard, and that was little cut chunks of stone ground rye bread. It's a very old place that these children are in, and it has a stove. So every day they bake their own bread there, these little children with, of course, the people who look after them. So that was afternoon tea, and with pieces of fruit for them as well. And again, I never saw a runny, sniffy nose. So ask questions. And I found out that in the kindergarten system in Denmark, some of the kindergartens aren't even in buildings. They can be in big bus-like things. And the children live a lot out of doors, and all of them have to spend a day a week out in the woods, irrespective of the weather. So they're brought up in this hard way.
I think there's a lot
in
that, Irene.
They're going to move this initiative to the high schools. They've started with the kindergartens. Now they're in the primary schools. They'll move on then to the high schools. They're changing the whole nature of things.
Thanks for telling us about it, Irene. I do have to go, though, but some good ideas in there. Thanks for telling us about them. And just on that, Walker has posted, if children need more physical exercise, why not simply incorporate it into the school curriculum? Most able-bodied kids would relish the opportunity of getting out of the classroom for an extra half an hour each day, running around, letting off steam. Even just a 30-minute walk to clear the head and get the circulation going. And Oliver has posted, in answer to the question, how do you get children to eat healthier food, the government should provide every child in public schools and less well-off independent schools with the offer of a free healthy breakfast and lunch every day. This will guarantee at least two healthy meals per school day for underprivileged children who are most at risk of unhealthy dietary intakes. You can keep those posts coming, and there is a spare line as well, 1300 22 55 76, if you want to call in. Let me bring into the discussion now Jane Martin, Senior Policy Advisor with the Obesity Policy Coalition. Hello, Jane. Are you with us, Jane?
Yes.
I'm glad to hear it. Jane, when we talk about childhood obesity, a couple of proposals keep coming up. One of them's already been flagged, a junk food tax, and I think we've also alluded to the other proposal, a ban or certainly significant restrictions on junk food advertising. Getting back to that Productivity Commission paper, it rejects both of these ideas. In the case of the tax, it says it would be difficult to justify. Do you accept that?
Well, I think it's interesting. We've just had the Assessing Cost Effectiveness Prevention Study, which found out of 123 interventions that a 10% tax on junk food was one of the best buys. And we've also had the same study done into looking at a ban on junk food advertising to children, again, which was found to be the most cost-effective intervention of a number of different interventions, including those in schools. So I'm not sure what evidence the economists are looking at, but certainly this is what another group have found. And I think as part of a comprehensive approach, we need to look at a number of levers which will change the environment that our children are growing up in, where unhealthy food is very cheap, it's very available, heavily promoted to them. I mean, Denise was just talking about cereals. Well, you know, Nutri-Grain is heavily marketed to children. You would think it would make your son into a gorgeous Iron Man. In fact, it's almost one-third sugar. Mm. And, you know, it's difficult for people to know unless there's improved labelling, such as traffic light labelling on foods, to disclose whether a food is high in sugar or salt or fat. These are the kinds of, pricing is very, very critical in the decisions that people make. We need to start looking at these levers, and the Preventative Health Task Force laid out the blueprint for change.
The levers
and
are
we
not
need to embrace that.
The levers are not necessarily simple, though, are they? Like, it's suggested, for example, that a tax on soft drinks in the United States led to an increase in kids drinking fruit juice and flavoured milk, for example, and there can be some problems with consumption increasing in that area as well.
Well, again, I don't think they looked at the best evidence. There's a few cents a can in some states on soft drinks. It's not a tax designed to change behaviour. It's a tax to raise money by the states. Modelling's shown that if you increase the tax by 10%, you'll get an 8% decline in consumption. And 14 to 16-year-old adolescents are drinking almost a litre of soft drink a day. There's been another report which shows soft drinks, related to diabetes. We know that it's a cause of overweight and obesity. We should be addressing these kinds of things. We should be looking at taxing things like soft drink, which provide no nutrition, which are really providing empty calories, particularly to children, and kids are very price sensitive. Let's start looking at something like that. We could start with that and use the money, some of the money raised, to run programs and also to subsidise healthy foods for those on low income, because we know there's this price differential where the cost of healthy foods is out of reach for many people.
Yep, look, that is pretty much precisely what one of our online posters, Arbuckle, has said in his post, and I quote, healthy, fresh food is so expensive these days in comparison with junk food. A single healthy salad sandwich over the counter will set you back, according to Arbuckle, $5. Actually, I've seen them on sale for significantly more than that. Whereas you can get a bacon and cheese McFat burger for $3. If a kid's only got $3 to spend on a feed, it doesn't leave them with much choice, does it? Kate Carnell, just, coming back to Arbuckle's post there, is there some merit in the idea that we could subsidise the cost of healthy food with money raised by a tax on unhealthy food?
That's supposedly what we're looking at here. The evidence that Jane's talking about isn't actually evidence, it's economic modelling, because everywhere that where we do have, say, a tax or a charge on certain foods, like the GST again, it is only on processed food, not on fresh food, there really hasn't been a move. And why that's the case, I think, is that this is not a really, it's not a simple area such as, say, tobacco, where there's only one product that we're talking about. In the case of, say, particular soft drinks, if you put a tax onto soft drinks, would people just change brand or only buy on special? There's a whole range of really confounding factors here. The thing we've got to be really careful about is these sorts of taxes hit people on lower incomes at a much greater percentage than people on higher incomes, simply because they spend a greater percent of their income on food than do people who are, on higher incomes. So it's a really regressive approach. You know, we hit the people who can least afford it the most.
But that's in fact the conundrum, though, isn't it? Because it's the people on low incomes with not much time poor, low income people who are seduced often by purchasing cheap, poor quality foods, and that's meaning that there's a particular problem in low socioeconomic environments with obesity.
I think there's an issue around a bit of education here. Now, I don't know. I did my shopping over the weekend, and carrots at the moment are about $1 a bag. Bananas were $2 a kilo. So fruit and vegetables, in season, are really not all that expensive, but you do have to know what to do with them, and you do have to do a bit of cooking at home, and there are healthier options, even at quick service restaurants and so on, if people choose to get them. Grilled chicken wraps. You didn't have to buy, the other product that was talked about. There are healthier options available, but people have to be interested in buying them and, for that matter, interested in eating them. And that's the reason, really, right around the world where these things have been trialled, there hasn't been any a reduction in obesity, and that's just a fact.
Yes.
It's just the truth.
Rob Moody, do you think Australia should introduce a junk food tax? And how do you respond to that? Because often the simple comparison is made with cigarettes. We've increased the tax in cigarettes over years. We've seen a plummet in the number of people who smoke cigarettes. However, there is no substitute for cigarettes. If you want to avoid that tax, you pretty much have to stop smoking cigarettes. That's not necessarily the case with food, is it?
Well, I mean, you don't tax food generally. I mean, it is about taxing particular components of food that we're worried about, and that's particularly, you know, high levels of sugar, fat and salt. You know, I mean, in a sense, what Kate was talking about, she's not wrong in terms of what's available out in the market and the level of information and practice around cooking, for example. But there's just such an imbalance at the moment. And your kids will be subjected to this, Paul, let alone, you know, other kids in the street. It is saturation advertising, and it creates a culture and it creates an expectation. It's all tied in with online marketing. It's tied in with toys. It's tied in with SMS messages. It's tied in with promoting to little kids to get to other kids. You know, I mean, you watch the 2020 cricket now. I mean, it's all about eating more and more junk food and looking thinner and thinner.
But
I
then,
mean, it
then,
is
then
created
kids,
a culture.
That's right. Then kids get to an age where, which is pretty much where my kids are at, where they do have a degree of independence. They do walk to school. They do earn a bit of money. Yep. So they're making decisions based on cost because they don't have much money. And that's a huge factor when they're deciding to buy a snack on the way home from school, how much money it is, and invariably the less healthy food is the cheapest.
And I think if we can get to a situation, you know, in a sense, voluntarily, where we changed our patterns of eating to much more healthier patterns, yippee. I mean, I'd be the first to cheer from the sidelines. I'm looking into the future, and I just do not see that. As I said before, the market is so heavily skewed towards junk food, junk drinks at the moment that, you know, the average parent is really battling. We know from survey after survey that 70, 80, 90% of parents actually want this to change. Mm. That's a landslide election victory, yet we haven't been able to introduce this across Australia yet. I'm sure it will come, but the point is it may well be far too late.
Jane Martin, are you hopeful that the forthcoming taxation summit agreed to by the federal government as part of its deal with the independents will take a good look at junk food taxes?
I think it does, excuse the pun, but I think it does need to be on the table. I think this is, you know, we've just talked about how price-sensitive adolescents are. My son knows the price of a can of soft drink within a 5 kilometre radius of his school, as would most kids, you know, 13-year-old kids. That this is something that we need to look at. And, I mean, I think we need to support people on a low income around fresh fruit and veg, but I think we really are paying the true price of fresh fruit and vegetables with water and transport and things like that. But we have to look at this. This is a really important part of the decisions that people make every day. And look, we don't need more cooking shows. Every time I turn on the television, there's a cooking show full of advertisements for more food and much of it processed and unhealthy. We don't need more of this stuff. I mean, I was looking at advertising spend the other day. Millions and millions of dollars are spent on promoting snacks and chips and confectionery and ice cream, and 4% was spent on advertising fruit. I mean, no wonder all children who were recently surveyed are eating too much salt, which is a marker for processed food. Most children aren't eating enough fruit and vegetables because it's not being promoted to them in the same way that this processed, unhealthy food is. It's saturation marketing, like Rob was saying. My son thinks if he goes out and exercises, it's okay to eat junk food because that's the message he's got through sport. He's a sports nut and he's, you know, getting vouchers with his cricket and he's getting watching the cricket and, you know, it's KFC. And that's the sort of associations. And you know, the next thing will be alcohol as well. Mm. This is how these large multinationals target our kids.
Yep. You're on Australia Talks talking about how to tackle the childhood obesity problem with Jane Martin. You just heard there from the Obesity Policy Coalition, Rob Moody from the National Preventative Health Task Force, and Kate Carnell from the Australian Food and Grocery Council. Now, for your thoughts, 1300 22 55 76. Should we tax junk food? Stan says we should. He comments online that the campaigns aren't working because the kids look at the adult hypocrites who don't practice what they preach. Children see their working poor parents coming home from work with just enough money to sit on the lounge, drink their beer and scoff fat-laden food. Hence, the sins of the fathers and mothers are visited on their sons. There should be a fat tax, says Stan. Let's go to Chris in northern New South Wales next. Hello, Chris.
G'day, how would you be?
Good, thanks, mate.
Yeah, look, I've got a 21-year-old son and a 20-year-old daughter, and neither one of them's obese. And there was a time when they were in the early, you know, teens when they were both obese.
Mm-hmm.
And there was also a time when they were 5 and 6 when they used to grab me by the supermarket trolley and run all the way past all of the lollies in the counter, you know, the entire aisle of the supermarket. And they would say, "No, Daddy, no, we don't want any smack bum pills."
Well, how'd you do that?
Okay, what I said to them was, "Listen, kids, you know how you're quite happy to sit there and play with your dolls for 2 or 3 hours at a time or with your Meccano set? And then when you want a cuddle, you come up and talk to me. And if I say, yeah, fine, have a cuddle, and I give you 5 minutes of cuddling, you then go away and you're happy for the next 2 or 3 hours." And they say, "Yes, Daddy, that's cool." And you know how if I say, "Oh, no, I'm really busy, go away, leave me alone," you come back after 15 minutes, after 10, after 5, after 2, after 1, and then I freak out because you're interrupting me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I smack your bum, and then you cry, and I go on a guilt trip, and then I give you a lolly, and then the lolly hits you in the head with the sugar and the tartrazine and the red dye and all the rest of the stuff, and you run around the room at about sort of halfway up the walls, and then you sit on my chest and punch me in the head, and I get cranky, and
okay,
I smack your bum.
I'm getting your point, Chris. I'm not sure we can build a public health campaign around it, but I do get your point. Thanks for your call. Let's go to Warren, who's in Queensland. Hi, Warren. No, Warren's disappeared on us. Give us a call back, Warren. We'll try to speak to you a little later on. Nicholas in Sydney. Hi, Nicholas.
Yeah, g'day.
G'day.
Yeah, something that nobody has mentioned yet, and this debate's been for 30 minutes, is what about people just eating too much? I assume eating a hamburger, it's got all the various food groups that you need, rather than eating 2 or 3 helpings, why not just eat one?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't hear any of this being mentioned by any of these interest groups that seem to be hijacking this whole debate.
No, it's a very good point, and it's been talked about before. We haven't got to it, but increased portion size is what you're referring to, the fact that we just eat quantity more food than we have in the past. Thanks for raising it, Nicholas. Lisa has posted online, "Get rid of the TV and computer games and see if there are more calories burnt." Wendy, our school cluster in northeastern Victoria, has participated in the Stephanie Alexander Kitchen Garden program with great success. The kids plant, grow, harvest, cook and eat healthy food together. And let's go to Jenny in Canberra. Hi, Jenny.
Hello. Hi. Hi there. I'm wondering if China still has outdoor mandatory exercise in the morning. If so, I think that kids and adults alike should start doing exercise in the morning before they go to school. And this is part of a community organisation incentive. And the work hours, school and work hours, should be changed to accommodate the hours or the time that it takes to do exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be state and nationally recognised that this program is going to come about. And I see everybody's need for involvement.
Yes, a mandatory national exercise type program. Thanks, Jenny, in Canberra. I want to hear now, though, from Helen Sui, who's been actually running an obesity program. Helen is the Acting Health Workforce Coordinator for the Indigenous Health Service in Toowoomba. Hello, Helen.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well. Now, Helen, you've been you've taught the Living Strong program to an Indigenous women's group called the Black Pearl. Tell us what that involved.
The Black Pearl?
Yeah.
Yes, I have. I co-facilitated the Black Pearls program with another health worker, and we decided to incorporate for something different the Living Strong program into the women's group. And the Living Strong program is a weight management program designed for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander men and women over the age of 18.
Mm. Now I understand, Helen, that this program involved visits to the supermarket to read the labels on the various products. Now, were the women shocked when they found out what was actually in the products that they were buying and feeding to their families?
They were, very much so. The shopping tour we organised with one of the local grocery stores to take the women along, and yes, we identified how much fats and sugars were in some of the foods that they were buying, and the women were very surprised.
And so they subsequently changed their purchasing and cooking habits, did they?
Yes, some of them did. Some of the ladies actually did have a big weight loss due to that. And also some of the other ladies, they just, even though they didn't lose weight, they actually did lose inches.
Did you help them prepare perhaps some alternative recipes that were healthier than the meals they were used to cooking? Was that part of the program?
Yes, it was, because there's 12 sessions actually involved in the Living Strong program. One of them is actually a health screening, and the other ones included, like the first one was, why do people get too big? So we, you know, that was the first module that we did with them. Other sessions include behaviour change, move more and lose more was another session. We also did a low-fat cooking class with them, and the participants actually, we brought all the ingredients along for them, and the participants actually had to prepare the meals for the day. Each participant had to do something to contribute towards that cooking class.
So it was really a combination of education, getting people to become more aware of what's in the food on the supermarket shelves, combined with, so education, increased knowledge, combined with behavioural change.
Yes, and we wanted them to try and make some changes to their lifestyle, not only just their lifestyle, but their families as well, and also to help them maintain this, you know, because it was an enormous benefit, just letting them know that it's an enormous benefit to their health. And we wanted them to look and feel better, and, you know, and also explain to them that it would reduce their risk of diabetes, heart disease and cancer as well.
That's right, because we do know that the Indigenous population does have a higher obesity rate than the rest of the population. Do you think this has been... But this has been an important program for your local Indigenous community?
Yes, it is. It is a very important... most of our health workers, Indigenous health workers, they're all Living Strong facilitators. So we try to run at least 3 or 4 programs a year, and we also work in conjunction with the Lighten Up program, which is a lifestyle program that's available for adults who want to improve their health, but that's for everybody.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. I mean, we've been talking, I suppose, generally about the program across the Indigenous community, but we're talking tonight specifically about childhood obesity. Is it important, do you believe, to target the mums so that they then know the healthy food to cook for their children, and so their children then learn what healthy food is as well?
Yes, exactly. And get the kids involved in the cooking. I mean, you know, the kids can be very helpful around if they're taught what to do, you know, and they've got supervision as well. So that's what we were teaching the mums, and there wasn't just mums there. There was grandmothers, you know, aunties, sisters, whatever, and if you can get that message across to them that it all starts back there in the home, you know, and the kids can be involved in the preparation of the foods.
Great to talk to you, Helen. Helen Suey from Toowoomba Hospital. And I'll come back to our panel shortly, Kate Carnell, Jane Martin and Rob Moody, and perhaps get a response from them to Helen's program. What's your view? What's causing Australia's obesity epidemic, and how can we turn things around? Donna says online that good food habits start at home, and you don't need a ton of money to eat well. Maybe a little time to prepare and cook. I really feel for the kids who are overweight. They have a hard time enough just getting through the teenage years, especially in this particularly image-driven culture. And June writes, I love my food and I am fat. This doesn't mean that I don't have respect for myself, and I deserve to be acknowledged as a person in the world as much as the, and she puts in inverted commas, normal ones. Thanks, June. Let's go to Warren in Queensland. Hello, Warren.
Warren, how are you doing?
G'day. You've called us back, Warren. Good to hear from you.
Mate, I reckon we should start by educating the parents.
Mm-hmm.
You go to any McDonald's and have a look at all the little fat roly-polies that are there, all the fat roly-poly parents. And I know, and get rid of kids on these computers and game things.
Yep.
I know one house that's got five computers in it. Now, one of the computers belongs to a five-year-old child. What the hell would a... How many
How many kids do you see out running around, mucking around the street, in their backyards? I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Yep, get them away from the computer and feed them good food. Thanks, Warren. That's what we're trying to do. Let's hear from Barbara in the Blue Mountains. Hello, Barbara.
Hi.
Hi there.
I would just like to say I was born in 1945 in England and had a very, very healthy upbringing, homegrown food, and until I was six, I was skinny. I then had my tonsils out, and I can remember being very upset by the whole thing. And after that, I started putting on weight, and I've been overweight on and off for the rest of my life. I'm now 65. So I think it's being unrelaxed. I think it has something to do with the mind.
Yeah.
I do. I really do. Obviously, programs are wonderful. Exercise is fantastic. I had a very healthy upbringing, as I said. We rode our bikes to school, and I mean, we had lots of sport. But I was still overweight.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I think I have no doubt there are a complex number of reasons. This is a very complex topic. And thanks for alluding, I think, to the sort of psychological component there Barbara is alluding to. Margaret's posted online that we need an environment in which children can safely walk, cycle, or even take public transport to school and move freely about the community. Kate Cannell, if I can come back to you. We did touch earlier on this idea of banning the advertising of unhealthy foods aimed at children. Your industry has already got in place a voluntary responsible children's marketing initiative. I wonder, though, whether that's enough. I mean, we have had in today's newspaper, I think it was in the Sydney Morning Herald, reports that companies are getting around this by claiming that their ads are in fact aimed at adults, even when they feature children.
Well, look, I think it's a big step in the right direction for the industry. And what industries, I suppose, said is that, look, there isn't any solid evidence to link advertising directly to obesity in children or, for that matter, the general population. But parents have expectations, and industry said we understand those totally, and that's that ads for high-fat, high-sugar, high-salt products shouldn't be on children's programs. Those are programs that children watch on their own, you know, cartoons, after-school programs, those sorts of things. Mm. We've also said that ads that are really aimed at children, you know, that have got children's terminologies, things that will affect, that will appeal to children for high-fat, high-sugar, high-salt products really shouldn't be on TV. And that's what the initiative does. And it's been incredibly successful. I think we've now got a scenario where only about 2.4% of all food and beverage ads that are for high-fat, high-sugar, high-salt on children's TV are actually there anymore. So it means we've got a bit of a distance to go. We've got a few companies that are still advertising, but we've moved a very long way in addressing that issue. That said, we believe when families are watching TV together, we talked about the cricket earlier, then it's really a matter for the whole family to talk about what occasional foods are, what everyday foods are. Australia's not into censorship. We're not into the business of saying people can't watch an ad for some chicken or for a hamburger. Those ads shouldn't be, if they're not for healthy products, aimed at children. They shouldn't be during children's TV. But when the family's there together, surely there's a level of family responsibility
here.
In fact,
Kate, some of our public health initiatives are compulsory. They actually do compel people and restrict certain forms of behaviour. You have to wear a bike helmet if you ride a bike. You have to put a seatbelt on in a car. There are legal requirements over the smoking of cigarettes. Now, I take it that it's not an exact parallel with food.
No,
I take the point. But governments have compelled... the point I'm making is governments have compelled people to take certain behaviours to protect their health, and if they don't, they're committing an offence. So it's not unparalleled...
Sorry, you're right, but in the case of seatbelts and bike helmets, there's really good evidence to suggest they really do have significant health benefits or public health benefits. Remember, there is no evidence or very little evidence at this stage that banning advertising does anything at all. Mm. And there are a number of overseas countries that have already done that approach. That said, industry has already moved to take those ads for high fat, high sugar, high salt products off children's TV.
I better get a response from Jane and Rob. I shouldn't have asked the question and cut you off, Kate. I'm sorry about that, but
I'm
cognizant of the short amount of time we have left. Jane Martin, just on that, the voluntary code that's been implemented by industry, are you concerned that some companies are getting around this code by claiming that their ads are in fact aimed at adults when they're actually aimed at children?
Well, Kate's got, again, you know, it's using definitions to confuse people. When she talks about children's TV, that's about half an hour a day between about 4 and 4.30, where these processed food marketers are advertising is in popular children's programs like The Simpsons, Family Guy, Modern Family, these kinds of programs that kids watch in large numbers. And it's absurd to say, it's very unrealistic to say that families should turn off the television, should interrupt every advertisement, explain what the advertiser's trying to do, talk about the nutrient profile of the product. I mean, that's just ridiculous. It's not how families live. And, you know, public health people care about protecting children. We've got an overweight and obesity epidemic. These companies that are resisting legislation and regulation, they care about profits. So we wouldn't expect someone like Kate, who represents the views of those who make money from the marketing of junk food to children,
it does raise
to be
the
in
point.
Favour of government regulation.
I think
we
Kate,
know advertising
but,
works.
Yeah, I think Kate does make a valid point, though, when she says, how far ought we go down this track if it involves, for example, censoring? There is surely a role for parents and children when information appears on the television screen in the form of an ad, perhaps not information, but when an ad appears, to discuss that food, to have a conversation about what that food contains, how much, if at all, you should eat it.
Well, that's Rob here. I mean,
Rob, yeah.
I mean, Kate's in a sense not wrong that's a great idea. As Jane was saying, it's very difficult to do. But remember, why are 70-80% of parents actually wanting the government to intervene here? You know, why is it even higher than that? Why do they find it so difficult? This virtual avalanche, as Jane said again, just the 2020 cricket's coming in. Just watch it, because all you'll see is basically KFC, KFC, Macca's, Solo, VB, and then it ends with a car. And that's, you know, 2 or 3 hours of... That's what Australian culture is becoming. Until we start to shift this around so that, you know, we are... Let's make money out of advertising healthy food. I mean, that would be great. Let's make money out of advertising activity and promoting activity. As Kate was saying before, I mean, it's, you know... Activity is declining. We've relied on our cars so much. Let's promote public transport. Let's promote walking
and biking
to school.
That's right. That gets to that whole of government approach. And I know, Jane Martin, you'd like to see a whole of government approach to this incorporating regulation on ads and the whole kit and caboodle, really. Are you hopeful that, I mean, that's a big ambition. Are you hopeful that we're heading in that direction?
Well, I think the buck stops somewhere, and I think that's what this Productivity Commission fails to understand, is that we're all going to pay for this in the end. We've got 63% of adults overweight and obese. We've got 25% of children. More will fall into that category over time. We're going to have 7 million people obese by 2015. You can't lap band all of those people. And it will be played out in our hospitals and in our economy, because we will not have a healthy working, productive environment. So when that starts to hit, government will act. So I know that the money will cause a change in the...
Got to go, Jane. Thanks for your contribution. Jane Martin from the Obesity Policy Coalition, Rob Moody from the National Preventative Health Task Force, Kate Carnell from the Australian Food and Grocery Council. This discussion will not go away. I'm sure that we'll revisit it. You can certainly contribute your views on our comments page, abc.net.au/rn/AustraliaTalks. I'm back tomorrow with another discussion, the Melbourne Cup. It isn't just about the horses, it's also about the fashion. And we're asking, do Australians know how to dress properly? That's on Australia Talks tomorrow. Stick around for Late Night Live with Philip Adams coming up after the 10 o'clock news. I'm Paul Barclay, and I'll speak to you again tomorrow.
Australia's training system needs a major overhaul. To build skills for the future, enrolments at TAFE and other colleges should be going up by 3% every year. They're not. And funding for the sector is going down. So how do we get the skills we need and who's going to pay for them? Download or stream this program from the Radio National website.